pistols. Please don't you touch me tomatoes. Touch me palm, me apple, potatoes. Goodness sake, don't you touch me tomatoes. Touch me this, touch me that. Touch me everything I've got. And if you touch me palm and me apple too. But here's the one thing you can just get and do. All you do is feel up, feel up. Ain't you tired of feel up, feel up? All you do is squeeze up, squeeze up. Mom, ain't you tired of squeeze up, squeeze up? Oh, mister, don't touch me tomatoes, please.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. That was Josephine Baker. Questions on nutrition are welcome today in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. Registered dietitian Susan Kundrat is our guest this afternoon, and she is now, we welcome her now as a regular guest on the Afternoon Magazine, and it's a pleasure to have her with us. She will now join us on a quarterly basis. Let me tell you a little bit about Susan if you haven't joined us on another day when we were talking about nutrition with her. She is the owner of Nutrition on the Move, a consulting firm in Champaign. She specializes in the development of sports and wellness nutrition education materials and workshops for coaches, athletes, health professionals, and the general public. She is the 1997, 98, and 99 directory editor for the Sports, Cardiovascular, and Wellness Nutritionists Guide to Nutrition and Fitness Resources. And she was named Registered Young Dietitian of the Year by the Illinois Dietetic Association in 1997. Give us a call. Questions about nutrition are welcome. Here are the phone numbers in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else you're listening in Illinois or Indiana, call toll-free 1-800-222-9455. 1-800-222-WILL. Susan, welcome back.
Thank you.
Nice to see you. Let's begin with some nutrition news. News about a health claim for soy.
That's right. We've got brand new news that's just out this week, actually. The Food and Drug Administration has decided to authorize the use on food labels or with food labeling of a claim with soy protein and decreasing blood cholesterol levels, which basically what that means is the FDA has ruled that 25 grams of soy protein a day as part of a diet low in saturated fat and cholesterol may reduce the risk of heart disease. And so that's big news as far as a health claim. It takes a lot to get a health claim actually be able to be on food labels. And so we certainly have talked before about the benefits of soy on this program and others that you've had. And so we're real excited to see this on food labels to help consumers understand what to look for.
Yeah. Is it how difficult or how easy is it to build 25 grams of soy into a diet?
Well, at first it may be a little bit hard for people if they're not used to having soy products. I have a lot of clients come to me and say they don't like tofu, but they may think that's the only food that has
right.
soy in it. So there are a lot of other foods that do have soy products. You can use things like soy flour. One thing I do is I mix a quarter of, let's say if I have a half a cup of soy flour, a half a cup of whole wheat, and then a cup of regular flour, and I just mix that together and keep it in the fridge, which is one way then you can use that as opposed to regular white flour.
Okay.
So soy flour is an easy way. Even things like canned soybeans now, you can find them, and those can be added to things like soups or chilies or things like that, as well as certainly tofu and tempeh. There are a lot of shakes out now. You can buy the packaged shakes that have soy protein in them. Certainly regular soy milk. A lot of people like soy milk to drink or soy cheese, which has soy protein mm-hmm. in it. So, and, of course, then there's a whole realm of products that are frozen products or tofu dogs, so tofu hot dogs or chicken nuggets that are actually soy but taste like
yeah.
chicken McNuggets that kids tend to like. So once people get used to taking it in, actually with a product would have to have 6.25 grams of soy protein to have the label listed like that. And that's not a whole lot of soy protein, but it's something to keep people to keep their eyes out for. We're finding that when we do eat soy protein on a consistent basis and eat enough of it, that may contribute to decreasing blood cholesterol levels. And, of course, we know that when cholesterol levels go down, that really decreases the risk of heart disease. So it's a very interesting area right now.
Yeah. What do canned soybeans taste like?
They taste pretty good, actually. They taste similar to, let's say, they're not exactly the same as kidney beans, but they're dense? Yeah, they're kind of dense, and they're, I don't know if people would like them by themselves as much as they would if they were in a soup or in a stew or something
chili
like that. Yeah, in chili.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And soy nuts, that's another place. Soy nuts are kind of like, taste a little similar to peanuts,
right,
but they're much higher in protein and actually lower in fat than peanuts. And that's a great, you know, soy nuts and raisins and pretzels, let's say, makes a great snack for a Ziploc bag for kids.
Those soy nuts taste so good.
Yeah, they do taste good.
I'm a little concerned, though, about the fat content on that, though.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do we need to keep that in mind? And, you know, what's a healthful serving of soy nuts?
Yeah, good question. A healthful serving would probably be about a quarter cup. That's probably okay. A good serving. So it's not too much as far as, because the calories are higher. One thing that's interesting, I was talking with Dr. Claire Hassler today at the Functional Foods for Health program. I do some work with that program on a grant. And she was saying that it was not going to be clear at first whether soy foods that were a little bit higher in total fat would be able to be labeled to have the label claim. But she said they have decided because it's good fat in soy, it's more of a unsaturated fat than a hard fat you might find in some of the other products, that even foods with a little bit higher fat from soy would be allowed the claim. Mm-hmm. So it's true that everyone always still wants to look at total calorie intake and what that adds up to.
Okay. Before we move on to another topic, I want to go back to the idea of the soy flour.
Mm-hmm.
Give me the ratio again. A half a cup soy flour, half a cup whole wheat, 1 cup white flour.
Right, okay. Right. That's usually what I use.
Mix it up, and then you can use that. If you've got a recipe for muffins, you can just take the flour component out of that mixture.
Yep, you'd want to store that in your refrigerator because soy flour does tend to turn a bit rancid if you don't, and that way you can just mix that up. I just keep it in a container in my fridge and use that as in place of regular white flour.
Okay.
You could certainly add rye flour or other whole grain flours to it too. Usually I try to keep half of the total mixture white flour, and then that way you can generally use it in all your regular recipes.
I wonder if bakeries and large scale and small scale bakeries are going to move into a soy flour product, because that sounds like it would be a very easy way to be able to make that claim.
Right. I'm sure we'll see more and more of that. The soy flour doesn't work exactly the same way as white flour in terms of browning and some of the other properties, but
okay.
I'm sure we'll see more of that all the time, and
right,
just soy being in more products all the time like we are now.
Okay. Can you get soy flour, because you mentioned that you want it fresh, can you get it in smaller packages, 1 pound as opposed to 5?
Sure. Some stores you can buy it in bulk. And so if you shop at natural food stores, you know, here, Strawberry Fields, Jerry's IGA on Philo Road has some, and most of the stores now are beginning to carry more of these products. And I imagine consumers will be able to find these types of products in most of the grocery stores coming up, especially with this change in the health claim.
Can you store flour in the freezer, and would that
you sure can
also extend the life? Okay.
Yep, you sure
Alrighty.
Can.
We're talking this afternoon about nutrition. Your calls are welcome. Questions are welcome. Here are the telephone numbers in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Toll-free 1-800-222-WILL. Well, one of the things that I have heard, I don't know, countless, it seems to me, people talking about carbohydrates. In this building, I bet you could count on two hands or more the number of folks who are trying lower carbohydrate diets or no carbohydrate diets. Tremendous interest in these diets. I want to ask you some really basic questions. The most basic of all, what is a carbohydrate?
Okay. Carbohydrates, basically carbohydrate is a measure of calories or energy in food. Carbohydrate and protein both supply 4 calories per gram, so they're real similar in terms of how many calories they provide. Fat supplies 9 calories per gram, so fat gram per gram is much denser in calories, and then alcohol is roughly 7 calories per gram. So we're talking carbohydrates is a lower calorie gram form in food, basically a nutrient or what we call macronutrient in food. And mainly carbohydrates are going to be found then in grains, anything like bread, rice, pasta, fruits, vegetables, milk products have some carbohydrate, sugars. Any sugar we might add, regular soda pop, let's say, is going to be all carbohydrate, or jelly or sweets mm-hmm. that tend to be high in carbohydrate. And so the general recommendation is that carbohydrates should make up the bulk of our diet. Carbohydrates also are found in foods that contain a lot of fiber, which is important for the body, for regularity and for a lot of other things. And also we know that carbohydrates, because they tend to be high in fruits and vegetables and whole grains, we know from many studies that people who tend to eat more fruits and vegetables and whole grains tend to have fewer problems with certain diseases like cancer and heart disease and some of these things. So those would be the main foods mm-hmm. we'd find carbohydrate in.
Okay. I guess you could say that maybe that there are carbs that are good guy carbs and carbs that you really have to watch out for. I know that yours truly here has to watch out for the refined sugars. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a fan of a little coffee cake or
mm-hmm. oh,
know,
yeah.
a little piece of cheesecake, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. So on these low-carbohydrate diets, do they completely take out... Are they just taking out those things that I need to watch out for, or are they also cutting way down on grains and fruits and vegetables?
Mm-hmm. It depends on the plan. There are a lot of plans out there now, and certainly they have become very popular. And some of the plans actually tell you to cut out on almost all carbohydrate. Maybe they would allow some salad or a few vegetables, but some of them say no grains, no fruits, certainly no sweets. To mainly base what you're eating on protein and fat. And then other plans, something like the Zone Diet, which is a little bit more liberal. Zone Diet is 40% carbohydrate, 30% fat, 30% protein. So it's certainly higher in protein and higher in fat than generally we'd recommend, but it also has considerably more carbohydrate than some of these other plans. Overall, what I suggest people do is really look to see if it makes sense to them, if the plan makes sense. To me, as a registered dietitian, of course, I'm a big believer in your whole grains and fruits and vegetables and eating the foods that we know may help in terms of preventing problems. And some people, you know, if their sole idea is weight loss and they're not really concerned about as much of the health
mm-hmm.
health things going on, then they may be more apt to kind of fall into some of these really restrictive diets. Which in the long run actually can be problematic because you may not be getting all the nutrients that you require.
Okay. Can you get on one of these diets, say, for a couple of weeks and get yourself going and feel like you've started something and then kind of fall back into a more traditional
mm-hmm.
way of eating?
Right. That's a good question. I get that question a lot. Generally, when someone goes on a very high-protein diet, they do lose some weight in the beginning. And the reason being, when you do eat carbohydrate, let's say you eat two slices of bread, when you eat that carbohydrate, your body needs to retain fluid when you've got more carbohydrate in the system. So once you don't eat very much carbohydrate and you eat mainly protein, your body doesn't need to keep as much fluid in its body. So you could lose even 5 pounds in 1 week just because you're not having as much carbohydrate. Yeah. So people who want really quick weight loss may try this, and they may lose weight quickly in the first week or first 2 weeks because they become very dehydrated. That's why a lot of the plans say drink lots of water, drink lots of water. Even so, you can become very dehydrated from not having carbohydrate. But then, unfortunately, that's kind of a masked weight loss. It's not real weight loss because once you begin eating normally, generally you're going to get the fluid back on and get back to what would be your typical weight. I think on any diet plan, you want to be careful of anything that's really drastic, first of all, because it's a huge change to your body. And second of all, some of these plans that call for really, really low carbohydrate actually force a person to go into ketosis, which is actually getting into maybe burning fat stores without carbohydrate. For some people, that can really cause a lot of medical problems. And for a lot of people, you know, the energy gets so low and can really change some things. So we don't generally, registered dietitians mm-hmm. or people in the nutrition community, don't recommend the real drastic approach because that can actually make some people sick.
Yeah. Well, you said that the zone diet is a little bit more moderate, and that's the 40-30-30.
Mm-hmm.
What does a good, in your view, what is a good balance?
Okay. I think it depends somewhat on the individual, because I do think there are some people who tolerate carbohydrate better than others, or maybe because of their exercise routine can benefit from a little bit more protein than others or something like that. But in general, I usually work within a, 50, 55 to 60% carbohydrate range for most people, but focusing on high nutrient carbohydrates, maybe fewer sugars and more fruits and more vegetables, certainly more vegetables and more whole grains. There's a study that's going on right now looking at breast cancer in women, and they're actually having the women take in 10 servings of fruits and vegetables a day, finding a way to do that, which you can actually do it, believe it or not, if you kind of plan ahead. And the research looks very promising as far as decreasing risk of breast cancer with high fruits and vegetables. So what I might tell someone is, we may want to increase your protein a little bit more to, let's say, 15 or 20%, which certainly would be reasonable for some people, probably not too high by any means, even though it's higher than the general recommendation. And then making sure that the carbohydrate sources are really high nutrient sources. And maybe there's not a lot of extra sweets, or maybe you do watch your bread intake or something a little bit, because we do tend to eat, a typical portion, let's say, of pasta, if you go to a restaurant, would really be 4 or 5 servings, maybe 2 cups. So, and of course, if it's there, we generally eat it. So,
yeah.
So that may be something for people to start thinking, well, maybe some of my carbohydrate sources, maybe I've got too large
more
a portions.
Yeah.
And so kind of gradually making a shift that way to it might be a little bit more protein, particularly lean proteins like lean chicken breast and certainly beans and peas and these soy foods, lean red meat, lean chicken, those kinds of things would be good sources, but not to go overboard on the real high-fat proteins. These are the problems. Some of the concern I have with some of the high-protein diets is I had a client not long ago, and she had been on one, and she said, it's great. I can eat, 5 strips of bacon every morning, 3 eggs every morning. I have whipped cream on all my fruit, all these things that I just have a problem with, because in terms of health-wise, it's just not healthy. And so looking at what might be reasonable, once in a while to have bacon, I feel is no problem. But every day to have that kind of saturated fat can be problematic. No question about it. And we just know that you might be missing out on other nutrients.
Yeah, it's one of these things where you really have to stop and think about it, because, for example, you can have something that's very low fat, but you can have it very high in calories.
Right. That's exactly true. I think the problem that many people have gotten into with this sort of fat-free craze that's been out there in the last 5 years or so is that they may eat very low or non-fat products, but eat a lot of them. And many of those products are a lot higher in carbohydrate and a lot higher in sugar in particular. So it may not be helping. They may actually be eating more calories, even though they're eating lower fat. And so I think I think personally one of the reasons this high protein thing has gotten so big is, first of all, I think people really want something to follow, and they tend to be the books that are out there. They're highly marketed. A lot of people are talking about them. So if a friend is trying this, you may go ahead and try it. So that's one thing. And I think that because they tend to be overall, if someone stays on them, they tend to be lower in calories, because at some point people get tired of eating all that much protein, but if they're not adding the carbohydrates back in, their total calories may be lower, and they may eventually lose some weight, but just not in maybe the healthiest way. So I think if someone is interested in one of these diets, I just maintain that you can perhaps get a little bit more protein and a little fewer carbs and keep your calories down low enough with exercise that you can see the same results, but it's a healthy way to do it. But perhaps there aren't as many of those plans out there for people to choose from that might be, as specific as these. I think as dietitians, we've had a lot of good general information we give out to people and percentages and things like this. But I think we need to have more diet plans that are healthy diet plans that would give people the alternative.
Okay. I talked with someone who'd been on one of these diets and reducing carbohydrate. And, I asked her if she ever got a craving anymore for, a nice big gooey piece of cake or something. And she said actually after she had cut those kinds of carbohydrates out of her diet pretty much, she kind of forgot about them. And she didn't have a taste for that stuff anymore.
Yeah.
Is there some basis in fact for that? Or is Or is it just you get into a way of living and that's just what you do.
Right. I think a couple things could be happening. For some people, if they do tend to crave a lot of carbohydrates and eat a lot of high sugar things, they might get on this up and down roller coaster where they feel like they have a lot of energy, and then all of a sudden they have no energy. And then they may eat more sweets and have higher energy. And once someone kind of gets off that roller coaster effect and gets more balanced meals, and this is a good thing with some of these plans that are out there that aren't too low in carbs, they do give people a sense of what's balanced. You know, and that helps people because it may be that someone just is eating very erratically and they get to where they're planning meals and they might be more protein, but they have some carbs at their meals and they get more satisfied. One thing protein and fat system, they don't eat as many sweets and they eat balanced. They maybe are more satisfied during the day, so they might not think to grab a sweet because they may not be as hungry overall. And that's one real benefit of having enough fat and enough protein in your diet for sure. Mm-hmm.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. I'm Celeste Quinn. Our guest this afternoon, registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. And your calls are welcome this afternoon. If you've got questions or comments, give us a call. Here are the telephone numbers in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. The toll-free line is good wherever you can hear us outside Champaign-Urbana. My name is Celeste Quinn. Let's move on and talk about another area. I remember last time you were on, we talked a little bit about supplements.
Mm-hmm.
And it was another hot topic.
Right.
Maybe you would share with us your general philosophy, your
okay.
feelings, thinkings about supplements. Do we need a multivitamin?
Mm-hmm. Okay. This is a point when you look at supplements, I think that people need to make individual choices as to what works for them. A lot of it's going to depend on someone's diet and how they are eating, their age, and these types of things. I generally believe that a multivitamin, which is appropriate for the person at their age and gender, is probably a very good idea. Not to say that it's going to replace food that you eat, but just because on a consistent basis, certainly a 100% multivitamin that gives you 100% of the RDA certainly won't hurt anybody and may be beneficial in the long term. So I've kind of changed my thinking about that in the past. Certainly when I was a dietitian and learning all about dietetics, it was all food, food, food. And I still primarily work with people on food because I think that must be the base of what someone takes in. But an overall multivitamin, I think, is no problem. I just finished an article for a fitness journal, and they interviewed three of us registered dietitians from around the country and got our idea. And I found that I still was probably a little bit more conservative on some of the supplements than some of them were. But now we're finding some real benefit possibly to vitamin E supplementation, particularly in a natural form of mm-hmm. vitamin E, particularly if someone has a higher risk for heart disease, that may be beneficial and difficult to get in the diet, especially if someone's on a lower fat diet. So that's definitely a possibility for people. The vitamin C intake that's recommended now is 60 milligrams a day. And we're finding from studies that probably, you know, at least two or possibly three times that amount is probably more appropriate. So this is something that's not hard to get in the diet. One cup of orange juice, you know, will give you certainly more than the RDA right there. So it's not that hard to get. But that's something for people to keep in mind. And then we are finding people who are over age 50 may have certain other needs too. Particularly we might look at calcium. We might look at vitamin B12 because that's not absorbed as well, or we can't utilize B12 as well as we get older. So that may be appropriate for some people too. So I do find that it's an individual choice. And then certainly with all the herbs that are out there, and many of the herbs have been real promising as far as helping people. I've had a lot of clients who've seen benefit from different herbs too. So that is certainly an individual case because so many of the herbs will interact with medication. So you always want to go through your healthcare provider on that. Mm-hmm. And it may be that you need to educate your healthcare provider too. Certainly clients of mine educate me every day too, as far as things they've maybe been using for a long period of time that I've never seen as much, or they might be new on the market here. So I think that it is individual, but you do want to take some caution because the way the supplements right now are not as well regulated as foods. So you do want to be careful. Some people will take things and think they can just take more of that, and that's not the case. You always want to be real careful, and you want to take tell your healthcare provider exactly what you're taking, not only with supplements, but also with herbs.
Okay. We've got some callers waiting to talk with us this afternoon. Let's go to a caller on line one in Champaign. Hello.
Hi. I've noticed that some of the vitamin supplements for older people have iron, and some of them don't, and they kind of advertise that they don't. Now, why is that, and is that really better?
Okay, that's a good question. Generally, we recommend that women who are, you know, past menopause and men after, I'm not sure what the age is, but generally grown men, we recommend you don't have iron in the supplement for most people unless you have specific needs, which you may if you have particular needs your doctor's concerned about. But we do find that high iron levels in the blood, that's one thing that may lead to higher risk of heart disease. And so that's why you might see that, them really saying no iron, because a lot of people are looking for that on the labels. Now, if you look at a multivitamin, let's say for me, I'm 33. If you look at a multivitamin for me, I look for iron because I'm still at a point where I need to make sure I'm getting enough iron, too. But that's the difference there.
Okay.
Okay, thanks
Thank
for
you.
The call. Our next caller is on line two, a car phone. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
I was wondering what your thoughts are about nutritional changes someone might make when they're exercising to build muscle, when they're doing weightlifting and things like that.
Great question.
Okay, very good. This is one of my favorite topics. So when we're thinking about building muscle, one of the biggest things you can do is make sure that you're getting enough energy. That's probably the biggest thing. It's particularly a lot of women divide that in half. That would give you 70. So that'd be roughly 70 grams of protein a day is kind of a good starting point. And you just want to look at that and you'd want to say, okay, am I getting a good balance, adequate protein but not too much, enough energy, enough calories so that my workouts are good. And then you want to look at timing. If you're starting your exercise, you want to make sure that a couple hours before your workout, you've had something substantial in, maybe even a sandwich or at least something to drink that has some carbohydrate or some energy so that when you do work out, you actually have energy to work out. One of the biggest problems I find with people who are starting an exercise program is they haven't eaten for 4 or 5 hours before they work out, and they wonder why the workouts don't improve. You've got to have fuel to go on with those workouts.
Okay. I want to thank the caller for her call this afternoon and welcome others to join us this afternoon. Your questions about nutrition are welcome here on the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest is Susan Kundrat, and Susan is going to join us now quarterly here on the Afternoon Magazine to talk with us about nutrition. Susan is the owner of Nutrition on the Move. It's a consulting firm in Champaign. She specializes in the development of sports and wellness nutrition education materials and workshops. Shops for coaches, athletes, health professionals, and folks like me, the general public. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Calls are welcome, 333-9455 in Champaign, toll-free 1-800-222-9455. Our next caller is on line one in Champaign. Good afternoon.
Hi. I read a piece in the Daily Illini, I think it was like late summer or early fall, talking about eating high-protein foods immediately after exercise, and it was specifically as it related to, I think it's leucine, L-E-U-C-I-N-E.
Mm-hmm.
What can you tell me about that?
Okay. There was a study that was done here at the U of I in Champaign-Urbana where they, I believe they looked at rats and fed them after exercise, looking at the amount of protein that they took in and how that actually affected, I think it was not only their performance, but actually how that affected their tissue building and protein intake in the body. And what they found was when they actually fed them the leucine, leucine is an amino acid, so it's a building block of protein. When they fed them that they had better recovery and things looked more promising. The study itself certainly has some merit, and I think there'll be more studies like this looking at what's the most important thing after exercise. We've always said certain things we do know about after exercise feeding. One of those is you want to try to get in fuel within 30 minutes, particularly for endurance athletes. When I'm talking about, let's say, if someone's working out 60 minutes or more at a time, within 30 minutes, you want to try to get in some energy as quickly as you can. The reason for that is because you still have blood flow to the muscle. And with blood flow to the muscle, you'll be able to carry energy to the muscle. Most of the studies that are out there now show that probably the best post-exercise nutrition would be a 3-to-1 ratio of carbohydrate to protein. So we are finding that protein may be helpful, but right now the bulk of the studies say that you still want mostly carbohydrate after exercise, but have some protein too. Okay. So, for instance, that would say if you had 50 grams of carbohydrate, you'd probably want around, 10 to 15 grams of protein in that too, which a lot of the post-recovery drinks now you'll see have some protein added as well as carbohydrate, where we didn't used to see that. The jury is still out as far as whether it's just protein or mainly leucine that tends to be, the best effect, but we do know that the carbohydrates generally are very beneficial, and if you have a little bit of protein too, that's helpful from what we know right now from the bulk of the research.
Okay, so what could you suggest that, say a kid's on a high school sports mm-hmm. team, what should they carry with them in their bag?
Right, that's a good question. If there are particular sports bars that an athlete might like, there are so many of them out there now. If you find one, let's say like a Tiger Milk bar, which is actually a smaller sports bar, that has some carbohydrate and some protein, mm-hmm. maybe that and a juice box, because the juice box is going to be all carbs. Mm-hmm. And so you might want to find something easy to eat with that juice box that's also portable.
Okay.
So that would certainly be a good idea. Even something like a little bit of peanuts and raisins in a juice box, because that gives you some protein, a little bit of fat, but mainly carbohydrate. That would be a good idea, too. If you just have something to drink, I would say juice is the best bet.
As opposed to like Gatorade or something like that?
Right. Gatorade certainly is really good during exercise, but after exercise, juice right away would be better because it's more carbohydrates, it's more dense in carbohydrates, so it can actually get more carbohydrates into the body quicker.
Okay.
Than sport drink. Certainly sport drink is fine too, but it's not as high in carbohydrates.
Okay, thanks so much. Mm-hmm.
Okay, our next caller is on line 2 in Champaign. Good afternoon.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
I'd like to ask you a question about fish. I'm very confused. A lot of publications recommend that we eat lots of fish, which I love,
mm-hmm.
but I've also been seeing a lot of information that some certain kinds of fish are really high in mercury, and so forth. I was recently pregnant. I ate a lot of fish and then found out maybe I shouldn't have. I'm just curious as to how do we sort through all this? What do you recommend?
That's a good question because there is a lot of differing information out there on fish. Probably one of the best bets that you can keep in mind is to still have fish in your diet but not have too much of it. Usually we recommend 1 or 2 times per week having a 3 or 4 ounce portion of fish. Okay, and that's not going to be a whole lot of fish, but it certainly might be enough to actually give you some of the benefit. And the other thing is what kind of fish you are eating.
Right.
We do know that the fish that tends to have more of the natural fat in it, which would be a good fatty acid, would be things like salmon and tuna and some of those fish that have some fat in them. So I usually recommend people, we don't have a lot of choices around here, but go where you feel like the fish is fresh for you and try to have some of that fatty fish, and then don't overdo it. I think we don't really know how much mercury is in some of the fish. It's really hard to tell, and it's hard to tell depending upon the supplier and where they come from.
And some fish now is farmed.
Mm-hmm.
So I would think that, say, if you've got a farm-raised trout, your fears about mercury are going to be much lower.
Right.
You shouldn't be afraid of it at all.
Right, exactly.
Okay, let's go to another caller, a caller on a mobile phone, line 4. Hi.
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 I just had a question. I have my own nutritional supplement business, and I sell vitamins and such and everything. And I had a question. A lady wants to order something, but she's on a blood thinner, and I was told that vitamin K, there is vitamin K in this product. And she is not supposed to take too much vitamin K, what do you know about that?
Well, there certainly are a lot of nutrients that can affect blood thinning, vitamin K being one of them. Vitamin E is another one, too, and actually something like garlic in a supplement can actually affect that.
Okay.
And so what I would suggest is the person talk with their healthcare provider and find out exactly what the recommendations are as far as amounts and what to look for that. Amazingly, we are seeing a lot more interaction between supplements and medications, and so that's something that you want to be really, really careful about.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay, I just wasn't sure about vitamin K.
Yeah, yep, that does affect blood thinning.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks for your call this afternoon, and we're here. This time went really fast. I want to thank Susan Kundrat, our guest this afternoon on the Afternoon Magazine. Susan is now going to join us on a quarterly basis, and I think if I'm thinking off the top of my head, January would be the next time, okay. And that'll be a really great time. I'm sure we'll have lots of folks who want to get off to a new start in the year 2000.
That's right.
With health and diet. So Susan will join us then in January. Susan, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure.
Okay, thank you very much.